Hi, this is Blake Morgan, and you're listening to Rod's Pulse Podcast.
Number 155.
Maybe I'm afraid of the way I love you. Maybe I'm amazed at the way...
Hi, this is Rod. Welcome back. So how do you like that? Maybe I'm amazed. That's by Blake Morgan. Now, I certainly thought it was Paul McCartney. I thought somebody did some sort of a mashup, but that's Blake Morgan. Stay tuned. I think it's a great song, and I play it in full at the end of my podcast. This podcast is sponsored by Inside Higher Ed, the online source for news, opinion, and jobs for all of higher education. I also invite you to follow me on Twitter. My handle is RodsPods. As always, I post links to all of the things we talk about on my show notes at www.rodspulsepodcast.com. My topic today is about the advances in textbook publishing. I have the pleasure to interview Vikram Savkar. He's the Vice President and General Manager of the Legal Education Division of Wolters Kluwer. We discussed the Connected Casebook. Quote, it's an integrated digital and print learning solution designed to facilitate deeper student mastery of legal thinking and stronger learning outcomes, end quote. So we discuss how electronic textbooks fit into mobile education, improvements in electronic publishing. If you're like me, you know that publishers have been very conservative bunch and have taken a long time to adapt various technologies, but I think you'll see that Wolters Kluwer is doing a lot to advance electronic publishing. We also talk about how authors publish books online with Wolters Kluwer, how content is adapted, or can it be, adapted for millennials. Does their product address adaptive or competency-based learning? We learn a little bit more about the Casebook platform, the future of audio textbooks, and what the various purchase options are for students. So without further ado, here's my interview with Vikram Savkar. Why don't you give us just a little bit of your background, how you came to work for Wolters Kluwer?
First of all, thank you very much for having me on the program. I've spent my entire career in the educational publishing and educational technology industry. I'm particularly drawn to being on the forefront of transitioning ways of learning that used to be based on print to new digital and technology-based approaches. I started my career at Pearson, of course, the largest textbook publisher many years ago. Started on the print side and transitioned over the years there to working on some of the big digital products. Then I moved on to Nature, who's very well known as the leading scientific journal in the world. They were looking for somebody to start up a global science education division, and I was lucky enough to get a chance to do that. Built a business pretty much from scratch there, entirely using digital approaches to textbooks and learning, and connected with a lot of scientists around the world, so that was pretty exciting. I came to Wolters Kluwer in 2012 because there was a unique challenge here. This is a very famous legacy business, the most famous publisher in law school textbooks in the U.S. and to a large degree around the world as well. We publish many of the most famous authors in legal thinking in the world. I came here in 2012, spent the last 5 years working with the team to really reinvent and rebuild everything we do so that we can be a digital learning solutions provider to the law school space. And we've had a lot of luck with that.
I note that Wolters Kluwer is almost as old as University of the Sciences, where I work. We started in 1821. I know historically publishing companies tend to be very conservative. I haven't published a lot in terms of books. I do have one book that was published at Springer Verlag quite a few years ago, and I know they were kind of behind the times. Now I think they've caught up somewhat. So I imagine there's a lot of pressure on traditional, you know, book publishers to move their content into the digital realm and make them mobile friendly. And I think it's very, at least my take is that it's very confusing for the customer, the student, for example, because there seem to be so many different platforms and ways to publish electronically. What would you say about that and what your company is doing to make that environment a little bit friendlier?
But if I pick one area to focus on to give you an answer to what we're doing, it's building a tight connection with the end consumer, who in our case is the student. There are lots of ways to think about launching digital products for law schools that could focus on the school, the dean, various kinds of analytics, the community, and so on. But we've made a choice that our focus is going to be the law student. That's the person we want to help most. And so we've put a lot of time and energy into getting to know that law student of various ages, demographics, backgrounds, different kinds of schools. We spent hundreds of hours over the past few years working with students, understanding what they care about, what their needs are. Sometimes we've observed them actually studying how they use books, how they use notes, how they use websites like Quizlet. And the more we understand about what they need, the better our ability to design products that delight them. That's been at the core of what we've tried to do, and that's been at the core of our success with our major platform, which is Casebook Connect. We launched it in 2014, and we're rapidly moving all of our most important legal titles into the platform, and students are increasingly over time connecting with our content through the platform. The platform has an ebook within it, but it also has a rich study center that's adaptive and has thousands of learning objects for students. And we've designed that to be an ideal companion for law students, to mirror exactly what they do when they do it. And because of the research we put into that process, that's how they've found it, and that's why they use it to such a high degree.
When you say workflow, I think of maybe it's not the same sense you're talking about, but it must be very different for a potential author to develop that sort of electronic content, compared to the old, printed book. What's the process like with for authors? I have quite a bit of experience working with faculty here at the university, and it's sort of analogous to having somebody that's been giving lectures to all of a sudden move them into an online program, and they're not familiar with the technology. And what can you say about that process, and how long does it take to develop something that fits your standards?
Well, it's a very interesting question. Actually, we see this as happening in two phases. In the first phase, we're working with authors of books that we already have, and we're transitioning them from print to digital. The second phase, which we're just getting to, is signing new authors to create products that are just for the digital platforms. So let me focus on the first one. The question is, how do we work with authors to transition what they already have for a digital paradigm? Well, there are a couple pieces to that. First, we have to redesign the print book for a digital experience, for an HTML experience, for the kind of interactive experiences that students expect online. And that's a very collaborative process. We have our experts, and we bring in outside experts to help us rethink learning experiences on the web or in an app. We get the author's input, we go back and forth, and I would call it a bit of a creative process. The second piece of that is that we add lots and lots of content around the book beyond what was in the print book. So our goal is for the digital experience that we're now focusing on publishing to be really superior to the old print experience, because students get access to a lot of stuff that they can't possibly have access to in print. For example, if you take one of our leading constitutional law case books in print, when we move it into the Casebook Connect platform online, students get that digital version of the book, and it's a really high-powered digital version that they can search in and highlight and annotate. It's a really great and successful experience for them. But they also get thousands, and in some cases tens of thousands, of other objects that are only available to them digitally. These can be short videos that explain difficult concepts to them. These can be questions, hypothetical exercises, issue spotting exercises. They can be simulations. They can be text explanations, lots of different formats of other activities. We arrange these other bits of content in concordance with the book. We make it available to the students as they're reading the book. So the book then becomes a launching off point for students into this deeper universe of learning. The goal is to make sure that they actually master the material. Sometimes when students read books, and I'll acknowledge that our books can be very challenging, sometimes when students read the books, they can find some topics difficult to understand. But when they dig into these thousands of other objects, by the time they're done, or some of the thousands of other objects, by the time they're done, they really do understand even the most complicated legal concepts. That other process of generating this other content is something we do with a series of other authors who specialize in these kinds of materials. So I would say the process of moving our existing books online is a bit more like making a movie than it is like publishing a book. There are a lot of different people involved, and we are to some degree like a movie studio, coordinating the production of all these bits and pieces that then come together seamlessly to form a great learning experience for the student. As for the second kind of author I mentioned, the kind of author we're going to attempt to sign now to create books that are specifically intended for this digital world, that's TBD. We really want to see what kind of author is interested in this. So many authors still want to make sure that their books come out in print, and we support that completely. But I think what we're going to find is the first dozen authors that we sign to publish digital-only books are going to have very different mindsets, very different goals. I think to some degree it's going to be a bit of the Wild West, and our job is going to be to make sure we put rigor and process behind that so that the textbooks that come out of that process are still very robust and very authoritative for students.
I'm thinking about how this might work and what the trends are, it seems, today is you hear about things like, you know, just-in-time learning, you know, micro-lectures. For example, our university is famous for their Remington textbook, which is sort of the Bible of pharmacy. And it's in two large volumes. It's 2,000 pages altogether. It seems these days, you know, students don't even want to read a long email. How do you go about trying to adapt and adopt your content for millennials and breaking things up into sort of bite-sized pieces?
Well, this is a really important question. As you suggest, millennials have grown up in an on-demand world in which content is available to them when they need it, where they need it, how they need it, and often in a bite-sized or atomized form. You watch a little snippet of a movie on the subway, then you watch another little snippet of another TV show at home. The idea that content is consumed in large sessions, I think, is fading a little bit. So you're absolutely right. To succeed in the educational content world today, you have to understand that the content has to be arranged in a way that millennials will enjoy consuming it. At the same time, our job as a publisher and the job of the excellent professors who are our authors is in some sense the opposite, is to make sure that students become comfortable with sustained engagement with lengthy, robust, and deep ideas. So there's a tension here. Part of what we're trying to teach students is to stay with content for hundreds, even thousands of pages at a time. But of course, part of what we have to do, since we're a commercial company, is to make sure we connect with the end consumer in a way that the end consumer likes. So that's quite a balance that we have to strike. And I don't think anybody's found exactly the right way to do that or the definitive way to do that. I can tell you what we've done, and it's worked for us quite well, which is that we ask our students to engage with us at two different levels simultaneously. So just a little while ago, I described how we have the digital versions of our casebook, but then also have thousands of other learning objects that are arrayed around that casebook that students can delve into if they want to understand the topic more deeply. So that's the balance that we strike right now. When the student is reading the casebook, it is a traditional, sustained engagement. But then, when they're having trouble and they dig into that deeper repository of tutorial and guidance, that is arranged in a way that's more familiar, more on demand. And what we found so far is that students are very happy with that balance. They go to law school because they want to think deeply. We're lucky in that regard. Law school is not a kind of school that attracts a student with particularly short attention span. Everybody who goes there knows that they're going to have to do a lot of reading and a lot of writing. So they are very comfortable with that, but they're also very happy when the additional material we give them is a little bit easier and quicker to sift through. So we're trying to operate with them on both levels, and I think most of them find that very healthy, and they find that a pretty successful paradigm.
Other trends we think about these days in future of education is certainly competency-based learning and adaptive learning. How can textbooks or the traditional, I guess you're not talking about traditional textbooks, right now with these new platforms you have. How do you grow into, you know, and use those techniques, competency-based adaptive learning? Do you address that?
So I think this is a really interesting question and a really important question, and I'll try to answer it at some length. If you go back to what I said a few moments ago about how the textbook piece of our online solution is designed for sustained engagement, that's not the piece of our program that's designed for bite-sized consumption. That tells you that I think that the goal of textbooks themselves is not necessarily to be adaptive, not necessarily to be part of an approach to learning that's built around competencies and applications. I think the goal of textbooks is to build that foundational level of understanding and familiarity for students so that they can then jump into the process in which they apply their ideas and test what they've learned and really form their knowledge and participate in competency-based assessments and participate in adaptive processes that change, accelerate, or slow down depending on how quickly they're learning. There are two layers here. I think the goal of the textbook is to move steadily and to some degree universally to present the same information to all students so that they have the same starting point. But then I think within online solutions, it's the goal of other parts of the technology, the assessment framework, for example, the tutorial framework, to build in the adaptivity to test students' competency, to give them virtual ways or real ways of applying what they've learned. That's what we've tried to do in our platform. In Casebook Connect, we have the textbook component, and then we have the study center, for example, where students can adaptively work their way through harder and harder problems and get feedback on how they're doing and understand what their strengths and weaknesses might be. We don't choose to focus on competency-based approaches right now. That's partly to do with the fairly academic way in which law is still taught. It's not taught at the moment with a deep focus, particularly in the early stages of law school, on application. But we do build in the adaptive component. And so that's the balance that I think is best for digital versions of content moving forward. I've seen a lot of solutions that try to teach students purely adaptively, that give students content based on how far they've progressed, and then the students consume that content, and then they go to the next level, and they really only have an adaptive experience. I've seen solutions that try to guide students purely through a competency-based approach. So students are given a problem, they're given just enough to learn how to master that problem, and then when they succeed, they move on to the next problem. And I think those efforts are really interesting. Personally, I think that those kinds of solutions will probably succeed with only a particular kind of student, maybe the most talented students or students who are most comfortable with that particular kind of learning. I don't see these as universal solutions. I think when a student lacks that basic static framework that we're used to from textbooks, they feel a little bit at sea in a purely adaptive environment. They don't know which direction they're going, how much they've covered, how much they have yet to cover. I think it's a little destabilizing for them. So personally, I believe, again, just to recap, that the role of the textbook is to establish that lay of the land, the map within which students feel comfortable, and to give them the basic knowledge. And then it's the role of other technologies, assessments, simulations, and so on, to guide students into that competency outcome or the adaptive acceleration that you refer to here.
Just out of curiosity, how does your platform work? Are they mobile friendly? Can you use an iPad or even an iPhone, or is that too small of a device?
Our platform, Casebook Connect, reaches students through the browser. That was a conscious decision on our part. Students use so many different kinds of technologies and devices that trying to design an app that will reach every single law student, I think, is very, very challenging. The only environment that every student uses on a daily basis is the browser, and that's where we've built our platform. And we're seeing the results of that, that a very significant percentage of law students are using Casebook Connect on a regular basis. It is very mobile-friendly. Of course, we understand that phones are incredibly important to students today. So it is a responsive site and it adapts itself to any kind of phone that students use. What's interesting is that we see that students use our platform and other platforms I've had in my previous lives in different ways. So what they do on their phones when they're in the library or on the subway is not the same thing that they do when they're in their dorm rooms, but on a different device. In fact, it's very different kinds of things that they do. In their dorm rooms, they're more likely to read the full textbook. When they're in transit or in a library, they're more likely to use the exercises or the study components. So their usage of the platform is compartmentalized to some degree based on where they are and what device they are using. This is something that I've seen in my past lives as well. It's something that I'm seeing here as we analyze the usage. And it very much goes into our design process as we evolve the product. It tells us that when we work on the responsive version of our product for mobile phones, for example, the architecture, the design, the organization doesn't just have to mirror the desktop experience, because in fact students are prioritizing different kinds of activities. So we do try to make sure that whatever device, whatever environment students are using the product on, the platform is organized in a way that makes it easy and efficient for them to use there.
That's good. Yeah, that's certainly the trend for students. They don't want to carry around a heavy laptop anymore. It also occurred to me, you know, as you obviously know, I'm a fan of podcasting. I listen to a lot of podcasting. Is the computer-generated audio reading the textbook? Is that something that you do? I can imagine students, you know, might just want to hear the words instead of read them.
That's a great suggestion. I have to admit, we don't right now. We do ensure that our product is accessible for students with disabilities. So students who have screen readers or other devices like that can use our content. But for the general student, we don't have a read aloud feature. But I think it's a really interesting suggestion. I know that most students enjoy podcasts, but also we have a lot of non-traditional students. I think people, when they picture law school, picture young people who have just graduated from undergraduate going to 3 years of law school. But in fact, a significant percentage of the population are people making mid-career changes, people with families, people in complex circumstances who are moving around, picking up kids from soccer practice in cars, and they spend a lot of time learning, not in the library and not in their dorm rooms, but in unpredictable places. And we know that for that particular audience, this kind of feature of having the text read aloud would be really, really useful. So I think it's a great suggestion, and I wouldn't be surprised if you'd see us launch that at some point in the near future.
What would you say to an author who has one of these legacy textbooks that's 2,000 pages long? Would your company, maybe not your division, but what process would you go through to take an edition, create a new edition of a print book? And oftentimes, you know, those expensive books obviously are not going to sell, and you're going to want to turn them into an electronic version. What would that process look like?
So we do that. I know you've posed that as an edge case, the idea of a 2,000-page textbook, but believe it or not, we have 2,000-page textbooks. As I mentioned earlier, law school is quite challenging and very demanding for students, and some of our textbooks, particularly our constitutional law books, are extremely long. So we have done this, and I would say there are two pieces to converting a book of this magnitude. One is the technical piece. So every textbook is organized in its own way intellectually, and at the level of XML, which of course underpins our site as all sites of this kind, there are always changes that we have to make to our schema, to our structure, to our metadata in order to accommodate a new work of this kind of intellectual magnitude. And so we have a lot of very bright people who analyze every page of the book and work with our conversion team and mark the book up, and then work with the authors to make sure that their understanding of the book is correct, and redesign our structured content approach. So that's the technical answer, but I don't think that's probably what you're asking about. The other piece of the answer is the creative side. Obviously, the worst thing that we could do would be to take a 2,000-page constitutional law book and dump it online and then say, there you go. That's done, but that's certainly not what we do. What we want to do is bring that book to life by moving it into a digital approach to help the student feel that the digital solution is much, much, much better, as I mentioned earlier, than the print solution. So that's a creative process, and that involves pulling together all of the various bright people who are in our orbit: video designers, game designers, assessment creators, law faculty from a number of schools, adopters, users of the products, students. Pulling all of those people together to work with us, occasionally work with the author of the original book, to really ask the question, if this particular piece of the book, let's say this chapter or this section of a chapter, had been created in the first place for a digital world rather than for a print world, how would it have been structured? There's no single answer to that question. We try to come up with a different answer every time. We try to learn from how students use what we've put out there to evolve and make it better. But that's the fundamental question we always ask ourselves. If we were going to teach this material and come up with it from scratch for a digital world without a book ever having existed, how would we organize what we're trying to teach? Once we have that vision, we then marry that with the content in the book and adapt it and sometimes come out with something quite surprisingly new.
Interesting. Yeah. Our students, we use Blackboard as our learning management system, and we have a relationship with a textbook distributor. And there's sometimes a dizzying array of choices students have, even for the same title. You know, they could order the print version. They could rent the print version. They could buy an electronic version, or maybe even rent the electronic version. What is your business plan? How do students purchase your titles? Are they subscription based? Are they all software as a service? Do they actually download all the content? What's it like from the student's perspective?
It is a SaaS system, but we have a couple of different ways for students to buy it. They can buy it directly as a SaaS model digitally. Or we include access codes for the product in most of the print books we sell, so students can buy the print book and get the digital along with that. Right now, since we're still in the first few years of launching this platform, more students are getting to the digital platform through a purchase of the print book than are buying it purely digitally. But we're seeing that balance shift quite rapidly, and I think there will be a point in the next few years in which the majority of our customers will be digital only or digital first, and you'll see that polarity reverse. It's not a subscription model currently. It's a straight purchase. And part of what we've learned here and what I've learned over the years from transitioning print businesses to digital businesses is that you are doing something that's unusual and challenging to people in the first place when you're moving them to a digital world. So you have to make sure that everything else about what you're doing feels as familiar to them as possible. If you tried to change everything at once, take a textbook, make it digital, change the pricing model, change the language, change everything about what you're doing, then I think you just wouldn't get any traction. It's too much change for people, too much uncertainty, too much anxiety. So we're already making one big change. We're reinventing a book digitally. So we've definitely made a commitment to keep the business model the same for students. They've been accustomed to buying a book and owning that book. So we have the same model here. Once they make a purchase, they get access to this digital content and they have it for life. In fact, that opens up one of the really intriguing possibilities that we see from this platform. By the time a student graduates from law school, she or he will have dozens of our books in this platform that she's bought over the years. And that's a pretty powerful library of law that she will take with her because she has that for life, and she will take with her as she becomes a lawyer in a law firm. There was a time when lawyers took their physical books with them and put them on their bookshelves behind their desks at law firms. It was a prestige factor. People don't do that very much anymore, but they will do that now in a digital way. When they sit at their desk at Ropes and Gray or wherever they end up, they will open up their browser and all of their definitive law books will be there for them. Now, we've only been out in the market with this platform for 3 years, so it's really too early for our alums to be out there doing that. So everything I've described to you, I think, is a vision rather than, at the moment, a reality. But I think it's a really intriguing vision, a way that we can make sure that the purchase they make now doesn't just help them now in law school, but will help them 15 years from now when they're doing business for clients.
Interesting. Have you seen trends towards students getting the electronic version rather than, or even the Kindle version over the printed copy? What's the trending look like?
So the law school space is a very particular niche, quite different from other markets like science or technology. The kind of student who's attracted to law school generally enjoys reading in a sustained way and enjoys reading books. So there's been a pretty strong attraction for students and faculty in this place, in this market rather, to stay with print books. So what we see is that the majority of students in law school, believe it or not, are still buying print books and they want to still buy print books. Kindle has certainly grown very, very rapidly over the last 5 years. I've seen it really expand. So clearly there are a lot of students who are making the decision to go digital, and they're going digital in a format that they're very familiar with. We're seeing the other ebook platforms, Google Play and so on, also grow very rapidly. So it's clear from the data that the market is flipping from print to digital, but where I sit right now in terms of student behavior, based on the existing ebook platforms, that seems more like a several-year journey than something that will happen tomorrow. Now, that said, what we are trying to do with the launch of Casebook Connect and our other digital products is to accelerate that transition. We think it's in everybody's best interest. As I've mentioned a few times, what we've tried to do in the digital platform is to create a learning environment that's actually better than the print book. So we think it's in the students' interest to move in this direction. They'll learn better. They'll master the subjects better. They'll be more effective. They'll succeed more. We think it's in our interest as a publisher as well. Obviously, we want to connect with our consumers directly through the platform and be able to engage with them and get data that will help us improve our products. We think it's in the institution's interest, in law school's interest, because successful students make for successful law schools. So we're trying to accelerate this transition as fast as we can. And candidly, I think that that we are. In the first year that we launched this program, I think we saw something in the order of 20% of law students jumping into the digital platform on a regular basis. They were dipping their toe in it gradually. And now we're getting up towards well over half of law students are using it on a regular basis. So they're voting with their feet. And I think as they get more and more experience of how powerful digital can be for them, we'll see that curve from print to digital bend quite rapidly. At the end of the day, law students are interested in only one thing when they're at law school, which is succeeding.
I think we're just about out of time. I just wanted to give you an opportunity to tell us about, I mean, this is new to a lot of my audience, what you're describing. Is there anything new and exciting that's yet to come that you can talk about?
Yes, there are a number of other exciting things afoot that I'd be happy to tell you about. First of all, within the platform, Casebook Connect, we've got some big features coming up that I think are going to be really impactful and that students are going to appreciate. One example of that is social learning. Because we know that law students do learn socially, they work in study groups, they share notes, they try to help each other succeed, we're building some of that capability into the platform, allowing students, as they build their case briefs and their notes, to share it with each other, first in groups within their school and then to some extent across the community. This is something that students already do in various ways, Facebook and some other platforms, but we think we have an opportunity in Casebook Connect to do it in a really structured way, since we've already got content that's organized around particular subject areas. We think we can connect students around those subject areas. I don't know where this is going to go. It's hard to say what kind of use students will put this to, but I think it's a really interesting new dimension of what we're trying to do by reinventing our programs digitally.
Well, listen, Vikram, it's been really interesting talking to you. I will certainly give links on my show notes to your connected casebook and your contact information. So again, thank you so much for talking.
Thank you very much. I really enjoyed it.
Well, that's it for this episode. I hope you learned a bit like I did about the modern textbook publishing and some of the advances that we're seeing now in electronic textbooks. So stay tuned for the full song, Maybe I'm Amazed by Blake Morgan. Until next time, have a great week.
You pull me all the time.
that's it for today's episode. Thank you very much for listening. Don't forget to give Rod feedback. You can leave comments on his blog or send email to rod@rodspulsepodcast.com. The preceding audio commentary is the product of the author, Dr. Rodney Murray, and does not represent the official viewpoint of the University of the Sciences or any other institution or company. Yes.